My background is that I am co-founder of the Berlin Buzzwords Conference. As much as the name suggests, it takes place in Berlin. And in the schedule, you will find buzzwords like Hadoop, HBase, scalability, cloud computing, full-text search, Elasticsearch, Lucene. So that's pretty much where the name comes from. Like, we looked at the first call for presentations, and we didn't have a name yet, but this seemed to be fitting. Apart from that, I'm software developer at HERE, that is like Nokia Maps, working with mostly Lucene and Hadoop on category search. Apart from that, I'm co-founder of the Apache Mahout project, member of the Apache Software Foundation, and founder of the Berlin Hadoop Get-Together. My first disclaimer, I already told you that I won't provide solutions, especially no turnkey solutions. I would just like to start a discussion here. A second disclaimer, most of what I will be talking about, most of the issues that I will be mentioning are highly subjective. So it's maybe good to know a little bit more of my background. I spent some time in a consulting company called Neophonie doing full text projects. I spent some time on a EU research project on social media analytics called DICODE. I spent quite a few years now at Nokia. I do have an affiliation with the Free Software Foundation Europe. I do quite a few of events. And incidentally, I also have a background in research. I've spent a few years at HU Berlin, where I've met a few researchers. But I've also done guest lectures at TU Berlin, teaching students how to use Apache Mahout and trying to talk them into becoming active themselves. So that's where most of the experience that you will see in the following slides is drawn from. Some of the experience is also drawn from this document. It's an open Google Doc word processing document. You can open it. If you have any input, I'm happy to receive more and share it with others. To get a little bit active, I do quite a few meetups in Berlin. At the beginning of each of these meetups, I pass the microphone around, asking everyone for their background. I've done the same at FrostCon with a full room. As the room isn't quite full today, I think it's okay to repeat the experience. So I would like you to each tell me why you're here, what you're trying to learn, and what your background with open source is. Like, just three to
okay. Hello, I'm Stefan. I'm a consultant from Percona, so I'm working with databases. And I'm here to learn on a topic that I don't know very well.
I'm Arvas, also from Percona, colleague of Stefan's. And well, our software is all open source. So yeah, we deal a lot with that. And that's why I guess we're here.
Hi, I'm Thilo. I'm working for an infrastructure as a service company. I'm doing KVM development, and I'm not yet active on the KVM mailing list, and planning to become so soon. And also, I'm your husband, so there are several reasons for me to be here.
I didn't force him. No.
Hi, I'm Martin. I'm working in digital television business. We're using a lot of open source software, without submitting too much back to the community, I have to say.
Yes, my name is Roland. I'm working for automation company, and we are using much open source software, and sometimes we find errors, and I want to get an idea how to convince the colleagues to submit their patches.
My name is Jeffrey. I'm working on Qvitendo, which is an open source ERP system. And well, I'm basically sitting here because I wanted to go to the S-Trace lecture, and I kind of didn't go anywhere else. So.
I'm Petrus Hamming. I'm here to learn how to convince others to to give patches and some and certain things themselves.
I'm Jan. I'm a co-worker of Jeffrey, and we maintain. Actually, we maintain an open source project, and we are at FrostCon as an exhibitor and as a speaker.
Okay.
The microphone has fallen out.
So, Schnack. Schnuck.
Alles klar. Okay, sorry, I'm Christian Tismer. I'm an open source developer since 15 years and creating some Python applications and ZODB things and so on. So, I'm just curious how the conference works.
I'm Florian. I'm working with a lot of open source projects as a user, and also I'm a committer to Apache project, a small one, and we are having huge problems attracting new users.
Which
project? It's an incubator project, ODF Toolkit.
Hi, I'm Dirk. I'm in a small open source project, and we have the usual problem. We need more contributors, so I'm happy for any input I can get from here.
Hello, I'm Adrian, and well, I'm interested how to contribute to open source projects.
Hello, I'm Andreas. During my day job, I work as a software architect for a software company creating solutions based on open source products. And in my free time, I contribute to the KDE project. And I saw many people joining open source projects and leave open source projects, and I'm interested in exchange.
Hi, my name is Helga. I work for Google. I just gave a talk about my open source project, Ganetti, and I'm curious how you manage to maintain a community and what you do to keep it alive.
I'm Rob. I work for Booking.com in Amsterdam, and we use a lot of open source. Personally, I've contributed to a number of open source projects. Most prominently, I'm a core contributor to the ACK source searching tool, and I'm curious how to get more people to contribute to ACK.
Hello, I'm Frank. I'm a student for BIS here at the university, and I have no real expertise in open source yet.
Hi, my name is Ronnie Tomer. I'm a core contributor of the OpenNMS project, and yeah, we're trying to building also extending our community in Germany right now, so I'm also interested how that may work.
Hello, I'm Wolfgang. I'm from Graz. I visit many open source events, and here I'm as a speaker, and at the university where I work, I always try to convince people, students, colleagues to use open source, and perhaps I can learn how.
Hi, I'm Stefan. I'm working for a big old dinosaur ERP company, plagued by the not invented here syndrome, and I'm working in a research group, and we hope to slowly lead the company towards the wonderful world of open source products, incorporating them, using them in the right way, and giving back to the community.
Hi, I'm Benny. I work for Google also, but I'm also a committer for NetBSD and MirrorBSD projects, so we always would like to have more contributors, of course.
Hi, I'm Corbin, freelance security. I'm also a NetBSD guy. I didn't even see Benny down here. And I just created a new project based on NetBSD, so I'm going to look for contributors. I'm curious to see what you have to speak about it. And generally wise, I'm into OS dev with my own OS project called Defora. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Mark.
I'm a freelance IT consultant, and I'm always interested in convincing other people to do my work.
Hi, my name is Jörg. I'm working in a large communication company in Karlsruhe, and we use many open source projects. And during my studies, I also worked with a Fritz project, but now I have not the time anymore.
I'm Max. I work at the University of Paderborn. We use lots of open source for our servers. I myself, together with Jörg, wrote some own open source projects in the firewall area and HPC area, and contribute to some other stuff, and like to see how this can be improved.
Hello, my name is Hannes. I'm an active open source developer, and I'm just interested in the topic.
So we do have a good mixture of users and people actually developing their own open source projects. That's good. So let's start. If you want to contribute to an open source project, how hard can it be really? We are, those of us who are actively working on any open source project, we are dealing with code changes on a daily basis, and all of that looks pretty easy. So you just check out the code, you modify a source file, you create a diff file, and you send it upstream, right? Very simple. It's a three-step process, extremely easy. To be honest with you, if you are a new user who isn't into open source at all, each of these three steps has its own peculiarities, and depending on which open source project you look at, you will encounter different technological issues and obstacles. First of all, okay, I probably have a Subversion project or I have a Git project. I'm pretty much familiar with both of these tools. After all, I'm a decent developer, so I know both of them. However, first of all, I need to find out where do I check out the code from, because most likely what I'm using comes with my distribution, it's a binary package, so I need to find out where upstream I find the source code that's causing me trouble. Then, of course, I need to get accustomed to the tool if I don't know it already. For the second step, making modifications, it may not always be the preferred solution to use Vim to edit your Java code. You may want to use an IDE. Then you may need to figure out how to import the Java project into your IDE, be it Eclipse or IntelliJ or what have you. You need to find out how to put all the dependencies on your build path in order to be able to build a project. You need to find out how to test your changes. Is the project relying heavily on JUnit? Is it being built with Maven? Is it being built with Gradle? Is it being built with Arndt? Is it something completely custom? Is it other tools? So you need to find out how to go from source level to a binary that you then can test and execute. Also, when making modifications, each of us who's working in a company or on an open source project is probably familiar with style guidelines, like what should the indentation look like in a very simple case, what kind of patterns are preferred, what kind of libraries should I include, which ones should I exclude. All of these discussions are in your historic memory of your open source project. They may even be on the mailing list, but if you're a newcomer, all of that may not be known to you. So even the simple thing of changing a source file may lead to quite a few questions. Then for the third step, you have created your patch file. Now what? Where do I send it? Do I put it in a Jira ticket like a custom at Apache? Do I put it into a Bugzilla ticket, which is custom, for instance, for Tomcat? Or do I simply send it to a mailing list? Which of the three options are preferred, or is there like a completely different way of submitting patches? So again, I need some documentation detailing the process of patch generation and patch submission. Speaking of documentation, where do I find that? So what I usually do is I Google for the project and try to find documentation from there. Me personally, I know what to look for. I know that I have to look for the website in order to find basic information, like for instance, where is the version control located. I should look for wiki pages to find kind of how to change things, how do stuff, how does stuff work here, where do I find architectural stuff. I know I have to look for mailing lists if I really want to go deep detail, if I really want to have background on design discussions, etc. I know I have to look at the issue tracker in order to not duplicate issues that are already there. And I also know that I have to search the web if some of the developers or users have already posted on the on a blog some kind of workarounds. But as a new user, finding all of these tools may not be particularly intuitive. Also, quite a few of the technologies are being used inside of companies and inside of research projects by now. Also, it poses quite a cultural obstacle to know that all the stuff you do is going to be published. You will have to publish work in progress. People are used to publishing a final result that looks pretty. That's not really always possible. If you do something until, according to your definition of done, it looks very pretty, you may still get feedback from the community that this doesn't adhere to style guidelines, that this kind of design doesn't match with what the project has on their roadmap. So you may get quite a bit of negative feedback and all of that in the public. I do know quite a few developers who are afraid of getting negative feedback, who are afraid of having that negative feedback searchable on the World Wide Web, where future recruiters can find all the criticism on their patches. So overcoming this fear of publishing stuff that's not yet done poses a large obstacle to people. Also finding issues that have already been solved but haven't made it into the release yet may be a little bit tricky. So some real world feedback that I got, and some of that may sound pretty familiar to you. First one is, I never had any issue with any project I use, and here I'm talking about a user who's using Apache Hadoop, which is known for being quite tricky to set up and quite expensive to get right. So I know at least three issues that I would like to see fixed in this project, and I came across them using the project for 2 weeks, a little bit more intense than just downloading the tarball. Another one was, I just make changes in my own repository. In this particular case, the changes were made to the source code, the binary was compiled, the jar file was put into a release to a customer. 2 years later, 1 year later, the sources used in order to build the jar file were gone into nowhere. So essentially no way to reproduce the binary. There's something else, something like this project sucks due to bug XYZ, but it doesn't pay to just fix it because it's so many things that are wrong. Well, it always pays to fix bugs of software that you're using because over time it will get better. There's questions like, why on earth are you doing it? Like spend time on Apache Mahout or spend time on a weekend at Frostcon? I think we all know why we are doing the latter one. There was one, no, not really one. There were quite a few feedback questions on patches. What are patches? I don't know what they are. And these didn't come from students, actually. So those came from people that are call themselves seasoned senior developers. They didn't know how to read a patch file, and they didn't know how to apply it. And if you have to start explaining how to do patches on that kind of level to someone who, in other contexts, is very senior, that's going to be pretty tricky. So I thought I should look at the whole problem from three perspectives, because the three groups differ slightly in terms of what kind of preconditions they bring with them. A is students, mostly drawn from German students. B is researchers, mostly from the EU. And C is professionals. Again, there is a country bias in here. You may find things being differently in the US, for instance. Let's start with students. This is a picture taken at TU Berlin in, I think, 2011. That's Ted Dunning, one of the core committers of Apache Mahout. the students around are part of class I was teaching. I gave the class 3 tickets for Berlin Buzzwords, and in turn had each of them select one of the speakers and have them interviewed. They all were working on machine learning projects. The Dunning is doing machine learning work in open source. Neither of them dared to interview the speaker. So I told Ted Dining about the incident. What he did was on Wednesday after the conference, take a bit of time, go to the students and talk to them in order to show them that he's really nice. He doesn't bite or anything, so he really likes answering questions. Okay, what do you get if you want to teach students how to do open source? You do have people who know very little about libraries or patterns. I mean, these guys usually are just about to start coding, especially if you go to universities in Germany as opposed to universities of applied sciences. So you're rather theoretically focused, also depending on the special interest area of the student. They may go to writing their bachelor's thesis without having done the sufficient coding exercises beforehand. Usually they are not aware of automated testing. The students that I taught for the first time in their life wrote unit tests that would be executed by Maven on a continuous integration server. Before that, they were mostly doing it manually, maybe doing JUnit tests and executing it in their IDE. Speaking of executing tests in Maven, they are usually unaware of build systems. Only very senior students will be aware of stuff like AutoTools, Maven, ARNT, and also all the automation around that. They may know about version control. So the version or Git is usually known to these people. They may, to some extent, know about issue tracking like Jira or Baxilla that may be used at their research group even. Most likely they don't know about the patch process. So most likely many of these people have never seen a patch, don't know how to apply it, and especially don't know how to read it. They tend to have a problem with doing everything in the public. So what I did with these students was trying to teach them to do a patch for Mahout. In the first half year, I left it to them to choose the time, the point in time when to publish. What this resulted in is students working for 3 months, for 4 months, for 5 months, essentially eternally polishing their patch and never getting it out. They probably know where to find documentation if you point them at least to the project web page. They may need to learn how to use mailing lists, so kindly tell them not to hijack threads. Like take a thread that has a particular topic, reuse the mail address by replying to that thread and completely changing topic. However, they do have an upside motivation-wise. They're generally very eager to learn new things. They are still in the process of learning. They are very open to new ideas. They are also very open to new ways of doing things. So what I did with them was instead of using their toy project, tell them to do patches for an open source project. That was completely fine for them, including the communication. So they are also very open to doing new ways of development, like changing their approach to doing software development, so it's pretty easy for them. On top, they tend to learn pretty fast. So what I found works for most of my, what worked for most of my students was to get them to publish both the intention to do any coding as well as the code very early and very often, including pushing them to do this unless they want to fail the course. So you really had to put a lot of pressure on them in order to just get the intention and the project proposal out there into an issue tracker. If you actively work at a university or you work on GSOC, tell the open source project that something is coming, because there will be issue reports that look kind of flaky. So people should know and should kind of know where to put these people. You should get regular, at least bi-weekly feedback. I've participated 3 times as a mentor for Google Summer of Code. what worked great for me is to have these people in like my XMPP roster and talk to them on a daily basis for 5 to 10 minutes, just to know they are alive, they are coding, they don't have any issues. If they don't talk back to you within 2 weeks, they are probably off down the completely wrong road and they will have to do all the work again. And honestly, that's pretty frustrating if you've worked on something for 2 weeks and you have to redo it. Most likely, you will have to ask proactively for any issues they run into. Many students that I encountered, it may be related to the fact that I've been mostly working with machine learning students. They tried to figure out a lot of stuff on their own. So I usually had to push them to ask questions and to get feedback. If possible at all, try to get them in touch. Try to get them in touch personally, try to get them face-to-face time. Conferences like FrostCon are a great way to get in touch with open source developers and to learn how these people think. At least to many of the Mihoot contributors, it made a huge difference being able to put faces to names and to emails and to texts. Once you've met a person, usually you hear them talking while reading their emails, and that may change the whole world for you. So something that otherwise may read very rude, when hearing the voice in your ear, that may no longer be very rude. Okay, so far the easy stuff. Getting a little bit harder, we are looking at research. Researchers usually do have a little bit more experience writing software. After all, they've published papers based on software systems. However, their understanding of what shippable code means differs a whole lot from what your open source project's understanding of shippable code may mean. In contrast to students, these people are very capable of understanding even complex code, so that's not an issue. You probably won't have to explain your design decisions in a whole lot of detail. However, they are not used to long-time support or to integration issues. So stuff like breaking backwards compatibility and having that being reflected in a version number may be a new concept that you have to explain, which otherwise is pretty much obvious if you have an open source project. Automated testing may be known. Build systems are generally known, so like how do you build source code? Version control also is better. Back when I was at university, the research group was still thinking, why on earth should we use subversion? We can just put a tarball somewhere with a date on it. That's fortunately going away. Issue tracking usually is still an issue. So I had an experience with a researcher on an EU project that found an issue with Apache Mihoot. So I told him, so he was pretty senior, he was in his 40s, I think. So I told him, go to the issue tracker, just file a JIRA issue and we'll fix it for you. He came back to me with a question, so I have to create an account at that community and then maybe put some text into a form, and I was like, okay, I'll do it for you. The patch process itself, creating patches and applying it, depending on your research group, may be wildly unknown. So here again, that's my personal background in machine learning. They're sending patches around. Usually meant explaining people what a patch is. On top, there may be legal issues lurking, depending on their contract. So you, as a researcher, you work for your university, so you have a university-based contract. Depending on your university, that contract may say that everything you do intellectual property-wise belongs to the university, so you may have to figure that out. I've been told it's not so much of an issue in Germany. It's a little bit more troublesome, as say, for instance, in the UK. So depending on the countries, it may be different. In terms of process, of course, these people are used to publishing their work. However, they are used to publishing ready-made papers that are finished and final and done. They are not used to having the whole production pipeline and the whole process, including all the steps in between, in public. They sometimes know how to use a wiki, an issue tracker. Some of them know how to use wikis, depending on your research group. Some of them see wikis as a place to put your Word documents. So there you should better find out what the level of experience is. Criteria for project health are largely unheard of. So open source there means you take some code, you put it under an open source OC certified license, and you publish it. It may not mean providing support for that code. It may not mean having an open public issue tracker. It may not even mean having Subversion or Git on a public server. It may even just mean dropping the code somewhere under an open license. You need to keep in mind that usually development is not their main business. Their main business is getting papers published. And that is reflected in the way software development is approached. They tend to be very open to using open source software. However, when it comes to contributing, you should keep in mind that contributing high quality code does take up time, that goes away and is taken away from the process of publishing papers. So that's time taken away from what gets their paycheck backed with money. So my general rule of thumb here, when being approached by researchers wanting to contribute to open source, there's quite a few EU projects where it's beneficial to have in the application a statement of intention to publish as open source. And sometimes for these applications, open source projects are being approached in order to get feedback on, yeah, your patches will be acknowledged. And at least myself, at the very beginning, was very happy about these approaches. Like, yes, there's more people contributing to my project. However, it may be that for some people, having the open source tag on that application is just another requirement to get a research contract. So it's nice to talk to these people. They won't actually contribute any code to your project. If you find out very early whether there's real interest in getting involved and in getting through all the loops, or whether it's just yet another requirement on their research project, finding that out may save you a lot of time and hassle. And again, getting them to publish intention and code early and often helps, as well as getting them in touch online and face-to-face once you found out that the intention is true and actually makes sense in their case. Okay, let's go to our average Joey developer. Concerning development experience-wise, libraries and patterns are commonly used, are generally known to these people, at least if you've got like more experienced good people. Automated testing should be common practice. Automated testing integration servers, continuous integration servers should be no problem at all. Build systems should be pretty much familiar, especially if they remain in their area of expertise. Version control is generally easy. Issue trackers are known. Also, internally, they sometimes tend to be less used than, for instance, at Apache, where whole discussions about design and implementation take place in the bug tracker. So that may need a little bit of getting used to, but not a lot. As mentioned earlier, the patch process itself, depending on the developer, may still be unknown. Don't be surprised if you find someone in your team who doesn't know how to read a patch file. It does happen. With most professional software developers, there's one issue lurking, that's the legal issue. If you take your work contract and you look at your work contract, there's usually a clause that says that everything you do, at least during your working hours, with corporate equipment belongs to your employer. So these people have to figure out how to legally contribute to your open source project. It makes sense to call that out very early, especially if they do it while on the clock. There's like one disadvantage when it comes to communication. As mentioned earlier, everything you do in an open source project is public. All praise, all mistakes, all criticism. So this may pose a major challenge to people who are internally known to be very senior, may be something like senior architects, and suddenly they have to be the humble little software developers that gets criticized for the tiniest little patch. That's challenging, at least. For them, software development is their main business. Usually freeing software is not, unless you work for people like SUSE or Elasticsearch.com, or you work for Red Hat. Open sourcing software may not be their major business. So what happens if you have a patch in your issue tracker and you wait for half a year until you give feedback? What happens is that the software developer may already be working on a completely different project with a completely different schedule and may not be able to give you a change or may not be able to give you adaptations. So it's crucial to give them very fast feedback in order to keep them in the loop. Of course, this also plays in with motivation. Like if you have to wait for 6 months until you get a tiny little comment on indentation being wrong, that's not very motivating. They usually tend to be open to using open source software. They may not be very versed with patching it and contributing patches. What I found helps is telling people about Yannick's law of patches. Yannick is a core developer of Apache Solr. He once said that a half-baked patch without documentation, without tests, and with a poor design is better than no patch at all. Put it out there, stick it in a Jira, people will iterate on it, and they will either help you to make it better, or they will themselves improve it. Again, contributing high-quality code takes time, even if you give very fast feedback. So you may run into people who do have enough time to give you a bug report plus a very initial bug fix, but who just don't have the cycles in order to make it really polished and publishable in a way that you can put it into the next release. So there may still be work that's left to be done on your side. What helps? Find out who you're talking to. What's your counterpart? Is that someone from management or is that a developer? Depending on who you are talking to on your mailing list, you may need to use different arguments. You need to be able to integrate their experience and knowledge to some extent. That doesn't mean that they should be allowed to break your design, but still be welcoming on your lists. Don't completely bash the patches out if it's a newcomer and there's clearly just a little bit of lack of experience. And as always, get them to publish intention and code early and often. If possible, get these people in touch online and face-to-face. What helped for me in Berlin was to drag colleagues over to Hadoop get-togethers, which are really, really low profile. So you go there after hours, you have two talks, max. So there's enough time to go for dinner afterwards and get them to talk to people. What also helps is if I have Berlin Buzzwords as a conference in town, there's usually on Wednesday after the main conference is over, hackathons and meetups. Those are being organized by local companies. They're completely free of cost. You can go there, you can have fun, and you can talk to the people. So I had one person in my team who worked on full text indexing algorithms in Australia, came back to Germany, had very decent code for Lucene. So I managed to talk him into submitting a presentation at Berlin Buzzwords and motivated him to at least talk to the committers, like during a beer evening at some point, literally taking him by his hand, dragging him over to the Lucene people and telling the two, hey, you should talk to each other. And then just walking away because I had other stuff to do. 1 year later, there's patches out there and there's a person fully integrated into the community, hopefully soon committer. So really like get these people in one room and get them to talk to each other. what I find very often with colleagues is that there is way too much respect for open source development. It's not like open source developers are heroes that won't talk to you. They will, especially if you buy them a beer. And with that, I'm open to your proposals and to your input. Yeah, go ahead. Should we continue with the microphone, or do you want to cut it here?
Just a suggestion, a little bit of, at Google internally, we have an instrument that we call a design proposal that is also used in some of the larger open source projects like, for example, Chromium. Which is, if you have a contributor that wants to contribute like a new feature to your software, before he starts, we have this short template which you fill out. It's one or two pages maximum. Just tell us what you're going to do, and then you can iterate on that, and that can save a lot of hassle. It has worked well for us.
Yeah. So one thing that I forgot to mention, what happened at one of the Hadoop meetups after Berlin Buzzwords that also helped, was I met with 10 to 15 people, one of them committers at Hadoop, and I asked them initially, what do you want to work on? And the Hadoop committer made a very interesting proposal. He proposed to teach people how to do patches. So the way he taught it was that in Jira, they had some getting started patches, really just documentation fixes, Java doc, where you can't break anything, just to get them through the pipeline. And throughout the day, he would show them how to check out the code, how to make the change, how to build the project, how to build the patch file, but then also showed them how the other side of the metal looks like how he takes a patch, how he reviews it, how it's being reviewed in continuous integration, because they have some automated test checking going on with Jenkins, and how it's then integrated into a trunk and then goes to the release. I found it very surprising to see people fix or grab these very simple documentation patches, but it really helped them go through the whole patching pipeline, like not having the fear of breaking stuff, but just seeing how the pipeline works. Just having these getting started issues up in your issue tracker may help newbies get started.
On the other hand, we as open source developers have the responsibility for looking after our issue trackers. That is a very important point. I've seen it more than once in NetBSD that genuinely useful contributions have just slipped through the cracks.
Yep.
I don't know why exactly. And you search for bug reports that haven't been touched in 2 years or something, and you find people's contributions that no one has looked at. So that shouldn't happen.
There's one interesting proposal from Brian Fitzpatrick at Google Chicago, actually. Was it Brian or was it a book?
Brian.
No, it was Brian, but I don't know if it was his proposal or if it was in the book on producing open source software. Either of both proposed to have, if your project is large enough, a person that's responsible for looking after the issue tracker, like someone who goes after these contributions that have been lurking there for, say, a few weeks, track down the developers who's responsible and ping them just to get some feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess in the patch lifecycle you've shown, there was one important step missing, and this is one mistake that is unfortunately often made in the KDE projects, that new contributors come up with a patch before talking to people and finding out that someone else is still working on that afterwards. And it's pretty frustrating seeing some experienced developer coming up with a better solution. And so KDE is pretty contributor friendly and is telling you who to get in touch with. So maybe you can contribute to what he already made. And we often take even bad patches and say, well, post it to the review board. We comment on that. Do some incremental changes, and when it's not perfect, but it's good enough to commit it, so the person's caught, and we can discuss for improvements later. And so we try. someone has to make to commit as low as possible.
Yeah, sounds very like a very good idea. Can
unfortunately, I have three different things to comment on. The first one is I have to underline what the guy from Google said. I saw a pull request on GitHub that was idle for like 3 months, mm-hmm. and I needed this feature, but I wanted also to work on something different. And I had to tell the main maintainer, was it just a very little script, yeah. Python script, but said, if you don't take this pull request, I need it, and I want to continue work on it, I will fork it, and I don't care about what you are doing. And then suddenly it was no problem, and so sometimes it slips below the radar. And if you want to value your contributors, you should try to have a very good look on that.
Especially if you have very few committers who have commit access, or like for GitHub being able to take the pull request, then it may already be an issue if these developers get a new job, get a baby, get in different life circumstances, and then suddenly you accumulate all these requests and later on have to work through them.
Another point is in your cycle of how to do the patch, the very three easy steps. As an outsider, once you contribute, normally in real projects, it's not that easy because you need all of those infrastructure around it. You need the testing infrastructure. You have to install the specific testing framework that they use because it's not checked in. You have to you have to do very many steps. You have to know how to do the integration testing with their server and stuff. So it's when I looked at your slide at first, I think that's a little provocative. It's not that easy, only the three steps, but there are many more
point.
Questions. That's another point. And the main point I wanted to comment on is I just read some time ago, it's very easy to start an open source. Just go to the issue tracker, take a very easy task, perhaps only working over the documentary if you can code, or take this little thing you just two lines at least start, and then take the next bigger step, and a bigger task, and a bigger task. The problem is, when I tried that, I looked into the issue tracker, and especially if the developer group is rather small and rather close, they know each other. Sometimes they only use the issue tracker as their personal to-do list. There's just one line in the subject, and no further information. They know what
that's
they need, what they want to address with this issue. But as an outsider, you have no chance to understand what we really have to do, and that makes all those perhaps for the experienced core developer very easy tasks that they think an outsider could do, makes it very hard to do because you don't know what they really mean with this just one subject line and all the rest is empty. And these experienced developers say, but when I have to in detail explain to you what I mean with this just one subject line in my personal to-do list, then I can do it myself. I'm faster.
But there's a good reply to that one, because as soon as you teach someone else to do your work, suddenly your whole productivity multiplies. It may not double, so new person may not be as good as you are at the very beginning, but over time your productivity will go up because they will be able to take on
exactly
these easy tasks.
Advice for the guys who are looking for the contributors, perhaps leave some little things open, although you could do them in like 10 minutes, leave them open just to feed your new contributors with very quick positive feedback. And so just crack the hard nuts and leave the easy ones to the new guys and not the other way around, because that won't work.
Yeah. So what I've also found works pretty well, especially also in Google Summer of Code, is to mark these easy issues as being easy. Because if you are a newcomer to a project, you may not be able to distinguish between what is easy and what is hard. So you try 2 to 3 and you find out that you cannot do either. It's very easy, for instance, in Jira to just have a tag to it that's like newbie or something, so people can search for it and fix it.
Sort of made a bad reputation, so what thing that we always try to
project, we have at least one person that is on duty to answer the mailing list, the IRC channel, yeah. The issue tracker. Of course, that works only for bigger projects where you have people working on it full time. And another thing we do, we have a more complicated setup for developers than for users, so more dependencies. It's harder to get it actually running, to get the unit test running. And so we offer a change route to easily set up an environment where you can just do something and send a patch that you don't need to mess up with your own product, your own workstation. And I think some project also provided for virtual machine.
That's a nice idea. Any other questions? Otherwise, we can go for bratwurst and beer, I think. Sounds like a very loud beer. Thank you.